some of my memories of Srila Prabhupada, which I will do again. Some memories I have of Srila Prabhupada. I was initiated in 1971. There's another Ravindra Swarup, which is not me. We read in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, the very first initiation, there was a guy named Ravindra Swarup. He was initiated with the name of Ravindra Swarup Das. And when I got initiated in 71, that was in New York. Prabhupada had been away for a long time. And people were waiting to get initiated from here. I was down in Philadelphia, and so he was going to have initiations up in New York. And so, the whole temple drove up to New York. But there was going to be a series of fire sacrifices every day. Because what Prabhupada did in those days, when he chanted on the beads, he did it in front of everybody. He sat on the Vyasasana and sat there while he chanted on each set of beads. So there was, I think, 12 or 14 people. Myself and my wife were initiated on the first day because there were so many people. And this is this temple in Henry Street in Brooklyn. And it was packed. People were sleeping on the roof, on the fire escapes, in the closets. And it had been a Catholic nursing home before we got it. Everyone came down with staphylococcus infections throughout the whole movement. This is probably still around. Because the hospitals are full of the staphylococcus. But anyway, so we were packed in there, so they wanted the people who were visiting from outside to go as soon as possible. So we got initiated on the first day. So Prabhupada, but it took a long time because he chanted on every set of 12 or 14. I don't remember the exact number. He sat there. We all chanted while he chanted. Looking at each beat, they chanted on this. And who got initiated? Ramapada Swami was initiated with that fire sacrifice. Hari K. Swami was initiated with that fire sacrifice. And so he called us up and he asked us the regular principles. And then he said to me, "Your name is Varuna Swarup." At least that's what I heard, Varuna Swarup. So I sat back down and I said to the guy next to me, "What did he say my name was?" And the guy said, "Govinda Swarup." That didn't sound quite right either. So then I went up afterwards. He said, "Your name is whatever it was, Swarup." And then he said, "Just like sunshine." He gave the meaning of the name. He said, "Like sunshine." So I knew that part anyway. And I sat down again. And then when Sadamani went up, he said, "Your name means brilliant night." And I thought, wow, isn't that poetic, sunshine and brilliant night. Sadamani means lightning, illumination caused by lightning at night. And the Bhagavatam there. Complexion is the goddesses of fortune compared to this Vidyutsodhamini, you talk like that. So I thought that was really poetic. Anyway, as soon as the ceremonies were over, I went up, the temple prayer at that time was Bhavananda. And I said, what's my name? And he looked at the list, he said, "Ravindra Swarup." I said, "Oh, not Govinda Swarup?" He said, "No." "Ravindra Swarup." And then somebody said, maybe it was him, but maybe somebody else standing around. I think it was somebody else standing there said, "Oh, someone else had that name before." And I said, "Who was that?" And he said, "A crazy hippie." just a crazy hippie. Then all day long people would ask me, "What is your name?" And I'd tell them, and they say, "Oh, someone else had that name." And I'd say, "Who's that?" They say, "That's just a crazy hippie." That's all I knew about him. And then Rupa Nuga told me, actually, who he was, because Rupa Nuga was there. He was my GBC, and he said he was a guy, his name was Bob Lankowitz. And so he got initiated. It's true, he didn't shave up or anything like that. Prabhupada initiated and gave him that name. And according to Rupa Nuga, he always called him Bob Lefkowitz even after he was initiated. And there's a whole, then you find out about him in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, because the people who are doing the research, they found him. But in the Lilamrita, he has the name Bill Epstein, because he wouldn't allow his real name to be used. Well, he wouldn't give the interview if they used his real name in the book, so they changed his name to Bill Epstein. But it's really Bob Lefkowitz. And there's a whole story in there about how Prabhupada went to San Francisco and he showed up crying and crawled on his hands and knees up to Prabhupada and put his head in his lap and cried and then walked in back out again. Nobody saw him again. Anyway, so I'm not that in the business. One time I had some association with Srila Prabhupada, because I was not a GBC or a sannyasi. I didn't have like some people who were servants or with him for a long period of time. And I would see him. I had to write to him regularly. At first, the regulations once a month. Every temple president had to write to Srila Prabhupada. Because gradually they cut down the number of letters. It used to be every disciple would write to him every time. You see these early letters. Anytime they write to him. Somebody has muscle spasms in the back, and he sends a pain recipe and all this kind of stuff. It was like. But gradually, devotees were told not to write to him. The temple presidents were supposed to do it. But Prabhupada told them, he said, I have the GBC, now you have any questions, ask them. Because he was always asking the same questions over and over, over again. So I would write to him when I became a temple president. And then I would see him when he would come to New York, because New York was, it's 90 miles away. And he was always stopping by there. I'd listen to class. And once in a while, I'd get into a darshan or something. A more private thing. And a lot of my interesting encounters with him were in airports, New York airports, either coming or going or both. Anyway, one of the times you could also associate with Prabhupada was in India. And during the Mayapur festival. And again, it was a little bit difficult because there would probably go. There was this forest of dundas surrounding. Every so often, I get to go on a morning walk or something like that. Although early on, something really weird happened that took me a while to figure out. This is pretty early on. I guess we were in the wall building. There was only this one building that what's now called the Lotus Building, and then they built a boundary wall. Conditions were with huts on one side. They didn't have permission to build any more walls, so they any more residents, so they built a wall. And on one side put what they said were storage rooms. That's where we stayed. Now there's shops along that wall. And one night, it was 8 o'clock at night, it was already dark, and somebody came and got me and said, Prabhupada wants to see you. And I was really puzzled, especially this hour of the night. I mean, everybody was really pretty much asleep. It must have been 8:30, 9 o'clock, something like that. It was really dark. So I went over to the conch building, the Lotus building. I went up to Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada was alone in his room with two of people I recognize as his god brothers. Gaudiya Math Sannyasis, his god brothers. The early days of the Mayapur pilgrimage, it was almost like war with the god brothers. I mean, we never heard Prabhupada's the word god brother of Prabhupada without the word envious put in front of it. And because it was really, it really was. I mean, one of his god brothers did everything he could to stop Prabhupada from getting land there. Went around to the local people, everything, tried to stop him. And there really was. I mean, it was pretty nasty. And then the very first time we went on pilgrimage, because here there's all these other, you know, Vaishnava temples. You want to go in and see the deities. And then this weird thing would happen. When you go in to see the deities, suddenly somebody would make you sit down. And then one of his god brothers would come out and start talking to everybody. Of course, it was all in Bengali. You didn't know what he was saying. But what he was saying is, this is my American disciple. Because like that was such a thing that Prabhupada had done. He had Western disciples. That was such a cachet, you know. So everybody was, so we were told we can't go in and darshan. We only go in groups on parikrama to visit the temples and things like that. Because it was really heavy. So when I walked into the room, and there was Prabhupada in his same the room in the Lotus Building, and there were these two sannyasis there, and they were all alone. And I couldn't imagine what was going on, so I offered my obeisances and I said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." And he said, "Tell me what you're writing your doctoral dissertation on." Because at that time I'd written to Prabhupada. He knew I was in graduate school and I was working on a PhD. When I joined, I was in my third year of graduate school, the PhD in religious studies. And all the devotees told me to quit. They showed me where Prabhupada talked about the slaughterhouse of the young and all this other stuff. They told me to quit. Well, I wasn't quite sure that that's what I should do, because I really, I just put 3 years into it. You know, I'm just finishing up my coursework. I just had to pass a language exam, take comprehensive exams, and write a doctoral dissertation, but the coursework was over. And so I wrote to Srila Prabhupada. I got the temple president wrote to Srila Prabhupada and asked what I should do. And Prabhupada wrote back that I should get my PhD. But still the devotees would say, Prabhupada said I should get the PhD. And then they told me, no, you should quit. Because Prabhupada's just telling you that because you're attached. They were so convinced, you know. But I just accepted what Prabhupada said, so. And then, you know, from time to time I'd write him about it. I had a correspondence about being in the university, and I actually had to teach a course on an introduction to religious thought. I was a graduate assistant. I wrote him about what should I do about that, and so on. So he knew about this stuff. So he said to me, what are you writing your PhD dissertation on? And I was so puzzled. I said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm going to write about the spiritual, social, psychological, cultural, historical, and economic necessity of Krishna consciousness. And it's true. I wrote a dissertation proposal like that. Ultimately, I didn't write that. To get a dissertation accepted, you have to have three professors agree to be on your committee. And two of them agreed. But I couldn't get a third one. And the third guy I was trying to talk into it, he says, you know, what you want to write about is very, very interesting. Because I did it in an academic way, you know, it wasn't like, it was actually about not being a Mayavadi. There's an argument for Krishna consciousness as opposed to Mayavad philosophy, but in a historical context. And he said, what you're writing is very, very interesting. He said, but it's not a PhD dissertation, it's a life's work. And he was right. You know. So I ended up doing something else. But at that time, that was my proposal. And so I said to Prabhupada, you know, this, social, cultural, economic, historical, spiritual necessity of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, ah, all around necessity. And I said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. He says, very good. Thank you very much. And I offered my obeisances and I left. And I thought, you know, what was that about? I just couldn't figure it out. And maybe it was the next year that I realized what was going on, because Prabhupada's Gandhi brothers were criticizing him. Because while they wanted Western disciples, they also were criticizing Prabhupada. That all his disciples are just drug addicted hippies. He can't make any like, you know, people of any caliber. They're all drug addicted hippies. And that's what he realizes. Here's a guy, what is your PhD? Just to show them. So I was really happy I did some service. I mean, I guess they didn't realize you could be a PhD student and a drug addicted hippie at the same time. I can't remember what year it was. Maybe the first pilgrimage was what, in 74? So I think maybe this is 75.
That's the year Krishna Balan.
Yeah, maybe it was. Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty spectacular too. Yeah. And there was another occasion like this with I think it was the next year that there was, Prabhupada had been talking to, maybe I should tell the story. Anyway. Okay. But Prabhupada had been talking, though this is the truth, you know, and some people are covering these things up now. Prabhupada had been talking to Sridhar Maharaj, who was, among all his godbrothers, the one that he was very close to. Liked him, and so there was an arrangement, and this is the only time we had any arrangement like this in Mayapur at all, was with Sridhar Maharaj. He had his Chaitanya Saraswata over at in Navadvip. So the arrangement was, all the devotees were going to Navadvip. And we're going to have a Naga Sankirtan. We go to the town with Harinam Sankirtan. And we end up at his mat. He would talk to us. We would take prasadam there. And then he would come with us. We would all get on boats and go back to Mayapur Chandradaya Mandir. We'd all go back with Sridhar Maharaj, and then Sridhar Maharaj would meet with Srila Prabhupada. That was the plan, you were told. So we did it. We went to the Naga Sankirtan, and when we got to the mat, they told us that Sridhar Maharaj was not feeling well, and that he wouldn't be talking to us. Instead, Govinda Maharaj, who was a kind of head disciple, he would talk to us. I think they fed us first, and that was hard for me because that was hot. It was really scorching. anyway, then he talked to us, and I was in the back, you know, in the back of the room, and it had a bad echo. And he had a sound system. So he was talking into the microphone, which looked like it was one of those microphones manufactured in the, you know, around 1932 or something like that. This big huge device, the big ring around it. I don't know this sort of stuff. So I couldn't hear him very well. There was bad acoustics in the room, and then so I couldn't hear him. Plus, at that time I was not that familiar with somebody with an Indian accent, except for Prabhupada. I learned how to understand him. So I was having an understanding. Well, what I did hear several times, I guess this is where I found out about this, the phrase drug-addicted hippies. He was glorifying Srila Prabhupada for having saved so many drug-addicted hippies. And I thought, that's great, you know. And then we were told that Srila Maharaj wouldn't be coming back with us. And so we got on the boat, because he was not feeling it. Got on the boat, went back, and Prabhupada was waiting. And somehow or other I snuck myself in with a group of GBCs who went into Prabhupada's room. Because Prabhupada wanted to talk to us, and he said, where is Srila Maharaj? Oh, Prabhupada, he couldn't come. And he got really serious. His face really changed, and he said, like really sadly, he says, this means that he too is envious. Wow, how did he know that? You know, I couldn't figure it out. That's what he said. This means that he too is envious. And then he had everybody sit down. And then he cross-examined all the GBC. What happened? What happened? What happened? And when he got to the story about what did Govinda Maharaj say? So they related to him how they're glorifying him for saving so many drug-addicted hippies. And then Prabhupada said, actually, he was criticizing me. That's when I found out, you know, what was going on. He was criticizing me because they're saying that I may have made Western devotees, but they're only low class people and drug addicted hippies, and I cannot make devotees out of high class people. He said, so actually he was blaspheming me. And then he said, this he went on, he said, and because you sat there and listened to it, now you have been done permanent spiritual damage. A word to that effect, irreparable spiritual damage or something like that. That's what he said. I mean, everybody was just horrified, you know. And like I thought, oh well, I was sitting in the back of the room, I didn't know what he was saying. I mean, he was really upset. Prabhupada was really, really upset. That's one of the things that happened. You know, because there's some propaganda from that side, how, you know, Srila Maharaj was the brains behind Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, and that they were always together and stuff like that. But I think the fair thing to say about Prabhupada and Srila Maharaj is that Prabhupada had mixed feelings about him. He had mixed feelings about him. Later, he had asked him, maybe it was the same year, he had asked him to become president of ISKCON. Because he was trying to do something. And president meant sort of like the president of India. It's a ceremonial position. That's what I was told. I forgot which GBC told me about this, maybe. And anyway, when Srila Maharaj declined, Prabhupada said, just as well. Because he had these mixed feelings. Because on the one hand, he was thought of as the most advanced. He wrote a letter to Rupa Nuga, who's the best among the lot of his godbrothers, at least he's following the regular principles, he said. He said that, but he also held him responsible he wasn't solely responsible, but in a large part responsible for the breakup of the Gaudiya Math. Because afterwards, there was a GBC established, I think, but then Srila Maharaj really wanted to have a single acharya. And Srila Maharaj was very devoted to Ananda Vasudeva, because Ananda Vasudeva made him a devotee. And Ananda Vasudeva was also Bhakti Siddhanta's secretary. And Ananda Vasudeva was a brilliant scholar. And Bhakti Siddhanta would be lecturing, and you know, mention a verse, Ananda Vasudeva would always quote the whole verse from memory, you know, whatever it was, he just was really good. And so so he was the one that pushed and finally prevailed in having him installed as the Acharya. And later on, they found compromising letters with a lady. He was having a correspondence, a love letter correspondence with a lady. And then everything broke up. Because when those letters were brought to Sridhar Maharaj, he said that they went to him and said, you know, you can't occupy this position. But he didn't agree, and so then they divided him in two, and everybody fought with each other. And then he began to doubt Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So that's what Prabhupada had these mixed feelings about him. I think that's the fair thing to say. Anyway, that was another another incident. One time in Mayapur, I was asked to come and see Srila Prabhupada. Kamal Krishna brought me to see him, and Prabhupada was interested in starting a college in Mayapur, and he wanted me to go into Calcutta and meet with the officials of the University of Calcutta, because he wanted the college to be affiliated with the university. He wanted it to be a graduate institution. He wanted it to be called ISKCON Bhagavat College. People would come and study with us and study our books. The University of Calcutta would give the degree, give the exam, give the degree. That's what he wanted to do. So I was talking about that. Then all of a sudden I'm going into Calcutta, you know. I think this was also 76 or something like that. You know, it was like, what is this? I had no idea what to do, that's what I asked him. I said, will we give a degree, Prabhupada? He said, yes, PhD B, Doctor of Bhagavat Philosophy. He said, and we would have the institution here in Mayapur, and then so I should see, because apparently the University of Calcutta had such an arrangement. I said, Prabhupada, we'll need a library. He said, yes, but only our books. And right then I thought, wow, you know, you're one shelf, you know, you're going to have a graduate school. So anyway, I went, so Dominique was with me, so we went together into Calcutta. Gopal Krishna Maharaj arranged his auntie, who lived not far from the temple, owned an apartment building that she lived in, so she gave us a flat. And suddenly we had a flat and two servants too. I was really the servant was calling my wife Mimsop. I couldn't get over it. And so then somehow or other, I went to the University of Calcutta, and it was just really hard to find out who I should talk to and who I should see. I think there was another devotee with me on occasion, Madhava Das, PhD in chemistry. So finally I found out I had to meet with this professor, Mr. Banerjee, who was the inspector of colleges. And so my wife and I went to his house one night and met him and his family. And so he explained that yes, you can have an institute. Apparently the Ramakrishna Mission had such an institute where people studied with them and worked under their supervision, but the University of Calcutta, you know, approved the dissertation and gave the degree. So it's been done. I probably knew this. But Mr. Banerjee said to me, in order to be approved, you have to have a good library. And that I thought was the sticking point. Because then I went with Gopal Krishna Maharaj. He came into Calcutta, and together we went to the Ramakrishna Mission. That was really funny. We met with the head of the mission, Gopal Krishna Maharaj. Got in a big philosophical discussion with him and defeated the guy. It was really good. Anyway, they had a huge library at the Ramakrishna. You know, it looked like a university, and big, you know, stacks of books, you know, what they call stacks, you know, at the university. So then, somewhere in the course of this, Prabhupada came back to Calcutta. He was leaving for Vrindavan, and I still was working on this. I hadn't really connected with Banerjee yet when he came, so I really didn't know what I was doing. And I remember going to see Prabhupada was in the evening. I sat in his room while he talked with a bunch of his leaders about somebody else who was doing something wrong. That was amazing how heavy Prabhupada was. So heavy. There's this idea that Prabhupada was old. It's really, really heavy about this guy. And then Prabhupada, he didn't have a chance to talk to me, and he said, come and see me at the airport. Because he was leaving. So I went to the airport, at Calcutta Airport. You know, Prabhupada was taking the plane to New Delhi, and they were sitting on these little bucket seats. So I went up and I started to sit down on the floor, and Prabhupada said no, and he patted the seat next to him. So he sat down and he asked me how things are going with the, you know, what's happening. And I said, well, I have to speak to this Mr. Banerjee and, you know, find out everything good. And so then we had some time to kill. And so I told him about how when he came to New York, one of the people he met with was Swami Nikalananda, who was the head of the Ramakrishna Mission in New York. And if you read the Prabhupada Lilamrita, he's just called the Uptown Swami. That was Swami Nikalananda, head of the Ramakrishna Mission. And all his followers were all these kind of really wealthy. Upper East Side was where his thing. They're all wealthy, you know, the kind of people now who pay, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for yoga lessons and don't think anything of giving you know, $2,000 for a 3-day yoga retreat. Those kinds of people. He had those kinds of people. And Prabhupada was the downtown Swami for all the counterculture people, Allen Ginsberg, all the hip people, the hip young went to, you know. Anyway, Nikalananda advised Prabhupada, he was that he should wear Western clothes and learn how to eat with a knife, fork, and spoon, and so on. Prabhupada didn't take his advice. But the same Swami Nikalananda was my first Hinduism teacher in graduate school. Because he was a scholar, he had translated all the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita and everything. And so at the Temple University Department of Religion, he came down, commuted down, I think, twice a week to teach this Hinduism course. And of course, it was straight Mayavada philosophy. He was at Nikalananda, was initiated by Sharada Devi, who was the wife of Ramakrishna. Straight Mayavada philosophy, which was, you know, Hinduism, that's all we knew. And he would come down, he wore this three-piece pinstripe suit, which is like old-fashioned lawyers wore with a vest. He even had a watch pocket with a chain. And he had a couple of his disciples with him. Anyway. So I told Prabhupada that I knew Swami Nikalananda. And in fact, when I first got there at the course, somebody told me, you know, last semester we had a bhakti yogi come and talk to us. And that was Prabhupada. He had come the semester before and had addressed Nikalananda's class. And I talked to devotees who were with him. What Prabhupada did was ask them, so you are studying Vedanta, so what is the meaning of Vedanta? And said, the Prabhupada said, Veda means knowledge and Anta means end. So Vedanta means the end of knowledge, and the end of knowledge is Krishna. So they're talking about Krishna. And then he did a program at the student union or something, and brought, so they made a devotee from temple union. This is, so I heard that way, I heard that this bhakti yogi, this is before I knew who the devotees were. I didn't meet devotees until my third year of graduate school. This is my very first. So I told Prabhupada about Swami Nikalananda, and then I told him another story I heard. As I had met, and remember, at this time there were still not very many Indian people in America, because in 1965 the immigration laws changed. Until then, there were very strong quotas against anybody coming into America from the East. In fact, it was called the Oriental Exclusion Act or something. And so if you were from India, Japan, China, Korea, you just, you know, kept out. Very few people were there. And it was changed by the Democratic administration in 1965. That's how Prabhupada was able to stay and get a green card and so on. The laws hadn't changed. So it was very rare. It wasn't until the early 70s you started to see a large number of Indian people in America, and so the Indian community that was there was very small, and they all knew each other. So I met this one lady who knew Swami Nikalananda, and I told her he was teaching Vedanta, and she started to laugh because Swami Nikalananda. And this is what I found out. He smoked cigarettes. And not only did he smoke cigarettes, he smoked bidis. You know, these little horribly acrid that usually, rickshaw drivers smoke and things like that, you know. Huh? Yeah, Indian bidis. They're made of tobacco dust or something, you know. Very crude and harsh cigarettes, you know. And cheap. They come in big bundles like this, not even in packs, you know. He liked bidis, and she told the story that when everybody was going back to India, Nikalananda, Swami Nikalananda would ask them to bring him back bidis. I was really shocked, you know. Here he was teaching Vedanta and a Swami, and he was smoking cigarettes, you know. So, so I told the story to Sri about Swami. I passed on some gossip, you know, about Swami Nikalananda. He said, "Oh, just see." And then later, Brahmananda told me that he met Swami Nikalananda in the early days too. And he told me that Swami Nikalananda asked him if he had any advice how he could give up cigarettes. Apparently people knew about it. Okay, it's time to stop. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.